Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Skyline studio, 18 floors above the Chicago River, in a beautiful, beautiful sunrise, glorious sunrise over the lake and Navy Pier this morning. And joining me here in studio are two good friends of mine and of the program, Brian Bernadoni, the Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors, and Eric Elk, who's the Director of Strategic Planning for Fulcrum, Illinois, a division of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. And we're back with our roundtable, because I figured after your mayoral predictions from before, you know, worked out so well, we should have you guys back again for a second chance.
Wow.
I was just going to comment on what a great day it's looking to be.
That's a lot of love.
Sunrise.
Eric, he introduces us as great friends of the program. And wow.
That's a I figured that's why I could say it. You know, and in some of my private predictions, I was vastly wrong as well. I mean, it was quite an election. And
I did call Ed Burke winning that one.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. But let's kind of look at aldermanic races. And we have 15 runoffs going on. And, you know, this could change the face of the city council.
Oh, without a doubt. You have situations where, I know as far as the realtors go, we're very concerned about an upsurge of Democratic Socialists coming in, and, you know, we've doubled down in races where, you know, affirmed Democratic Socialists were out there running, and we've done fairly well so far, but there's still some races that we're very intensely watching. I think we're very, you know, very concerned but confident that Alderman O'Connor is going to win in 40.
The fact that that went to a runoff.
Yeah, it's startling. I mean, I think the for political institutional types, we're being fracked. The underpinning of everything that we're involved in is being shaken from underneath in such a way that, you know, traditional political machines can't really absorb some of the things that are going on. They can't figure out or make moves quick enough. There's an upswing of new voters and new voting techniques that aren't really being reacted to by a lot of the organizations and traditional factors. And I would extend that out to the business groups as well. We've had to really change how we were approaching a lot of these elections, going back into some of the grassroots stuff that, you know, frankly, is not and has not traditionally been our strength. We used to just throw money at things, and now we're involved more intensely in precinct by precinct, ward by ward, direct mail and digital targeting and all sorts of stuff.
I'm the recipient of a lot of the realtor's mail.
Well, we're thankful for that. We'll talk about that. You know, but I mean, it costs a lot of money to do that stuff.
Well, yeah, but is this a natural kind of evolution of our political process, that you have this kind of more back to grassroots insurgency kind of thing? I mean, because you could argue, we saw that with Republicans, with the Tea Party movement, and we're seeing it with Democrats and more like the, you know, indivisible kind of movement. I mean, is that kind of a natural exponential thing, or is it something that you see has been, you know, fueled by the controversies with Donald Trump in the White House?
I'm not sure. I think from what my gut tells me that the social economic fractions within the city are now turning into real political hot points, and it's again forcing us to look deeper into the communities than we ever have before, to forcing us as a realtor organization to really get involved in neighborhoods and economic projects that we wouldn't have normally gotten involved in the past. It's rather from a top-down, it's a bottom-up approach to our politics, to our policy approaches. I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Well, yeah, I think you have a whole new way that people are, voters are getting their information and where they're getting it from.
It's the dissemination is easier with social media, and it's not as costly, you know, as doing the direct mail, which wasn't always that. I mean, it was expensive, but it wasn't the way you kind of.
Right. I mean, you know, doing mail-in campaigns for years, I mean, it's still very effective, but you know that you have maybe 20 seconds, maybe 30 seconds with that mail piece in someone's hand. You know, for me, when I open my little mailbox down in the breezeway, pull everything out that's jammed in there, you know, and I'm kind of looking at it, something might grab my eye between the time I get up to my unit into the trash can is about the extent of the time that I have to see that. However, we're all on our devices. I mean, these phones are something that you'll go back to the house for if you forgot, or your iPad while we're, you know, on the CTA, while you're on Metro or something, you're scrolling through different news sites, and people are able to be, you know, you're targeting. You know, look what the governor up in Wisconsin did when they had the big state Democrat Party event. He built a geo fence around, everyone was there, captured all their info, and was able to start communicating directly with them.
I agree to a point, but again, that relies on technology, on people who have technology. You get into some wards in the city of Chicago where it's not as technology heavy, or economically, or people who don't have the economics to engage in all of it, it becomes a little bit more of a struggle. I'm seeing it in the burbs where, you know, I'm involved in some races, and I'll just tell you, door to door knocking is still still the most effective thing if you can find the people to do it.
No question.
Well, and that's what I mean about this. It's almost an evolution back to old school.
Yes,
in certain respects,
you've kind of come full circle. Yeah. I mean, when you are able to spend the time at a door with a potential voter, you know, there's something about that personal interaction that voters remember. The fact that someone came to their door, talked to them, answered questions, and then take it a step further, you've collected their email or phone number, you're texting them, emailing them. I mean, everyone loves that personal touch.
I think we're seeing that in some of the aldermanic races where there's a couple races. I'm not going to identify the alderman in this one, but there are a couple races where the alderman just relied on mail alone and found themselves in a runoff. And they had a viable organization. You ask the question, you know, why weren't you out walking doors? Well, we thought we had a very good mail campaign. You've got to have a mail campaign. You've got to have, you know, phone calling, door knocking, sign placement. All those things get involved.
Multifaceted.
Absolutely.
Well, and I have to wonder, too, if, you know, some of the people caught in these runoffs, some of the incumbents, just it's like, well, you know, like the mail thing. Well, it's the way we've always done it. And, you know, that kind of mentality against this evolutionary change that we're seeing.
Well, years ago, there were certain aldermen that we would, you know, I track aldermanic politics all year round, every year.
Yes, you do.
So,
yes, you do.
So we have a very good idea of what I used to identify as slow, fat, and lazy wards. Wards that were untested by any kind of significant primaries. And that would go from state rep, state senate, all the way to Congress. If they had solid incumbents the whole way through, and you saw that the organizations were untested. And it was even worse if they, for example, were pushing a judge and that judge doesn't get through, then you know that they're in real trouble. And what you would do is, and I did it in a number of cases where I reached out to the alderman and I would walk up to him and say, look, you got a few minutes to talk. We've identified you as an organization that's slow, fat, and lazy, and that you're vulnerable to someone coming to you. And in those cases, to a person, each alderman ended up winning their races and thanked me for identifying that they were slow, fat, and lazy. Now, you've got aldermen in this race where some of them were clearly in that genre, that they just take for granted that they've got name recognition. And in Pat O'Connor's case, who is far from being slow, fat, and lazy, that's a ward that delivers. Pat's in a situation where, you know, there's just this idea that change is a good idea no matter what change is going to bring you. And for voters in the 40th ward, you know, they've got to, to me, they've got an easy choice. Pat O'Connor's a great alderman, but change for change's sake is not a good idea in some of these races.
No, but I think, but there again is kind of the insurgent theme.
Absolutely.
And a dominant theme that is...
Well, that's the whole fracking thing. It's this underbelly of shaking where let's just make something happen and blow it up. And, you know, that's disruptive to this body right now.
Nobody's thinking the long-term impacts or effects. I mean, it's right here, right now, instant gratification and what this means. And, you know, judging these things based on a few sound bites.
We're speaking with Eric Elk, Director of Strategic Planning at Fulcrum, Illinois, and Brian Bernardoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors on our special pre-runoff roundtable. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, with our pre-runoff election roundtable with Brian Bernardoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors and Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. We're starting out here with talking about the aldermanic races. And we've been talking some generalities here, too, about, you know, the kind of the insurgent effort here. And, yeah, they're, of course, short-term change versus what you expect, status quo stability. But at the same time, I mean, we're looking at a kind of political system and changes in Illinois in a broader sense of a political system where it's not about wanting to be a machine anymore, where it wants something different. In the Democratic Party, it's not necessarily a matter of knowing what you want. It's just we don't want what's there now.
Oof. Yeah, I mean, it's
well, I mean, am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. I mean, you look at in 2015, we had 15 or 18 aldermanic runoffs. We now have 15. I mean, the first time we had a runoff for mayor in 2015, since going back to 1999, and I think it's definitely exactly what you're saying is people are upset. The problem is we're not going to have while people are upset and things like that, they don't turn out to vote. You know, we'll have a very low percentage on the voter turnout. Although you look at early vote right now compared to 4 years ago, we're up 14,000 votes in the city, which is pretty good.
Yeah, except again, I'm very cautious that early vote numbers don't necessarily translate into turnout numbers because
correct.
Early vote has become more and more accepted as a way to vote.
You can still early vote up until tomorrow.
Correct.
I mean, a day before the election.
Yes, I've been advising some of the staff here about that, just in case they wanted to cast a ballot early. But seriously, I mean, I expect we're going to have a bigger turnout than we did in February. But I'm also hearing cautionary tales about that as well.
This election, I don't have the same... I don't have a feel for it. The first one, I had an absolute feel that we were going to be lower than we wanted to be. This one, I just don't have the feel. And again, it comes to where those certain ward organizations are going to really crank it out or not. It's really hit and miss. I think where the excitement of the races are at the aldermanic level could churn it out, and you know from there you can start extrapolating some idea of where things are. But some of the aldermen I've been talking to, they'll say it's average. It's going to be an average turnout.
Well, let's look at what specific races should people look at in the aldermanic contest?
Oh, I mean, I think if you live in that ward, all of them.
Well, absolutely.
Leslie Hairston's got a primary battle. I mean, a runoff battle. Leslie Hairston, I think, is going to get enough support from President Preckwinkle to come through her end of that. Stephanie Coleman is running against. Let me turn that one around. Tony Folks is running against Stephanie Coleman. Stephanie Coleman is the Democratic committeeman of that ward. She has been basically running, doing nothing for the last 4 years, but running for alderman, getting ready for this race. Stephanie Coleman is been supported by a multitude of groups, including us at the Realtors. I think she's going to. That's a predictable one, in a better sense than some of the others. And I think Stephanie Coleman may be an upset in that one. 20 is a hard one. 20th Ward. I always feel bad for residents of the 20th Ward.
Well, I mean, yes,
because it's just. You know, it's a great ward with great potential, and you know, between indictments and other things that have faced that ward, the ward can go anywhere but up with the changes that they're going to make over there. Brookins has got a tough race. He shouldn't have been in a runoff, but Howard Brookins is up in 21. A race that a lot of people are focusing on right now is the race between Byron Seco and Alex Acevedo. That one could very well go down to the wire. That would be the Pilsen area.
25th Ward.
25th Ward. Ariel Reboyeris has got in a race against Congressman Gutierrez's daughter. Reboyeris has been working very, very hard. A lot of folks didn't think he was even going to make the runoff, and he just missed by points, missed by a fraction of points of making it.
Winning
outright. So we're very hopeful that Reboyeris wins in 30. In 31, you've got a battle between some of the venerable organizations up there, between the old 31st Ward organization is supporting why is this name slipping me right now? I usually have that note right in front of me. Against Millie Santiago and 31.
Felix Cardona.
Yeah, Cardona. Cardona's a young, smart guy, and that race could go down to the wire as well. It's multiple aldermen are involved in that race, which makes it that much more of a challenge, and it leaves blood on the floor when we start talking about a council trying to come together after the election is over.
Well, and I mean, go up to 33rd Ward and Deb Mell, and to me, what does that say about how the world has changed? That what the Mell organization was, and now you have, you know, Deb Mell in a runoff.
Well, 33 is one of those wards where you've seen all the talk about gentrification, all
right.
The talk about development, and that's been a challenge for Alderman Mell, because she's in a kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't thing. You know, I think you want to be supportive of economic development in your ward. You want to help build it, but then there's the whole ramifications of growth that many aldermen are coming face to face with.
Right.
That, you know, if you grow a ward and make it better, all of a sudden rents go up, and now you've got a different dynamic altogether, and you have people saying the rent's too high, and that's what Deb Mell is facing there. The Mell name is strong. I think Deb Mell is going to have enough support from not only her base but others within the old Mell organization to hopefully pull it out. But that one's going to be very close. We like Sam Nugent. The Realtors have a very extensive survey that we put out towards our for each candidate. She's running against Bob Murphy in 39. The committeeman is a great Democrat and all that, but Nugent's vision was much more consistent with where Realtors want to be. That race could be very tight. There's the interesting thing in that race is that all of the in that open seat, all the opponents that all the candidates decided to endorse Nugent. So we'll see if they actually carry through on their commitment in that one.
So a lot to be looking for, and a lot that are potentially very close in these aldermanic
races.
These
races aren't going to end early. You know, I think as you get into 40, 43, and 46, you got O'Connor, Smith, and Kappelman. Kappelman's had to deal with the growth of Uptown, another issue where an alderman finds himself in trouble because of growth and economic development. Michelle Smith's campaign has been very dominated by issues of growth and expansion. I mean, she's fortunately in a position where she's seeing what Lincoln Yards is doing and the ramifications of it, but dealing with growth has always been a problem in 43, no matter what. O'Connor is basically that's a neighborhood dispute on steroids right now.
All kinds of things to watch for.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin as we continue our pre-runoff election roundtable with Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors and Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. Brian, I know very quickly you want to touch on a couple of other of the aldermanic runoffs.
Yeah, just real quick. We expect Alderman Sawyer to win again in 6. We expect a very good alderman in the 15th ward, Ray Lopez, to win in 15. The real hot seat in this one is this battle between Matt Martin and Michael Negron in 47. That's to replace the Maya Puar who's running for treasurer. That one's going to go neck and neck. It's an interesting race because it shows how much signage, money, and everything can be pushed into one ward at one time. It's too close to call. I think you hear, and it's one of those wards that are like 43 and 42 and arguably 2 where everyone's connected to downtown one way or another.
Right.
So, it's a high anticipation of service and it's too close to call and we stayed out of that race entirely.
All right. Well, now let's go to the main event here. And this would be the contest for mayor of Chicago. Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle against Attorney Lori Lightfoot. And, when you look at a variety of trends here, trends don't vote. But when you look at the fact of various elements of the political factions in Chicago throwing endorsements to Lori Lightfoot,
do endorsements vote?
Endorsements don't vote, but they can signal trends.
Sure.
Right?
But then the trends don't vote.
But then trends don't vote. Right. So will it affect? So do those have an effect? I mean,
You know what? If I were running and I had the Teamsters, the pipe fitters, the Chicago, the Cook County Chicago Building Trades, all those guys with me, I want those endorsements all day long. Those are troops.
Well, but so you have Lori Lightfoot, who's got 7 of the 14 candidates, 7 of the 12 candidates that were defeated in February. She's got the backing of 7 of those candidates. Tony Preckwinkle doesn't have any. Do those swing any votes? We asked that about Willie Wilson and other things.
I mean, Willie's endorsement would mean something because he may actually go back out on the street for you. There's most of the other candidates, when I didn't see that second tier communication, which means not only am I going to endorse you, but I'm going to give you my book and I'm going to, these are my supporters and, we can message together or do a coordinated campaign. Here's my list and let's do it that way. The endorsements from the trades are important. I think from the business groups are secondarily important. And I represent a business organization, and we can't compete with the trades. The amount of money that SEIU and the CTU put into some of these races, is just jaw dropping. I mean, frankly, they've given us every reason to go back to our members and say, look, we were one of the biggest business groups out there spending money on your behalf to preserve a pro business, pro-growth city council. Look how much Labor did. You think we spent a lot of money. Take a look at what Labor's doing, and you can get a feel what that competition level looks like.
So you said, Service Employees International Union, CTU, they're behind Tony Preckwinkle. There had been some question, and going back to pre-February, about, for example, CTU, and while they endorsed Preckwinkle, was the membership fully committed to her? And I wonder if that's still a valid question today, now that it's just a one-on-one kind of contest.
The money's already out on the table. The votes you never assume.
It's one thing for it'll be interesting to look at this while they. The leadership gave money. Did the general membership turn out en masse and move for that candidate as well?
And
or is there kind of a diversion within that organization?
Well, I mean, most of those organizations, though, I mean, if CTU gives money, but they're also sending notifications to their membership saying this is who we need you to vote for, period. I mean, that's, you know, it's usually a dual tiered kind of thing, and usually there's a strong, that's the strong messaging that's coming from labor on it. Business groups, we just don't have that ability to do that like that.
But speaking of money, for example, so yeah, CTU, SEIU in money support, but who goes off the air in the final weeks of the campaign? She's back on now as Preckwinkle. Who's been raising a lot more money lately is Lightfoot. Is that a signal? Is that a trending signal in the money race?
I mean, it wasn't until, what, three weeks ago, where it really became apparent that Lightfoot was getting a lot of the money from the business community.
That's kind of what I meant too, yeah, by the endorsement and the trending and everything.
It's almost like a spigot
opened a little bit.
Well, her message torqued. Okay. I mean, for several weeks, on the basic issue of rent control, she was President Preckwinkle has never wavered on being in support of rent control. I mean, that's in favor of lifting the ban and letting Chicago decide if it wanted to go in that direction. You know, that's President Preckwinkle puts her foot down. There's one thing you can say about her there. Lori was much more lawyerly. Yeah, very nicely done.
You're welcome.
About in her approach to her answer, and it was harder to peg her down. Once she won the primary, she became much more clear that she was not in support of rent control, period. So there was a distinction point there, and that was the first time we heard it. And I think for us, that was a very good signal to say that there's an opportunity to work with her, at least on this level. But I think what you also saw her in, and I've heard her give presentations from the Civic Federation and others, her tone is much more moderated towards, I think, what a lot of the business groups needed to hear, or at least not be as scared of her as they were maybe going into this thing. Because clearly business was looking at other candidates, Daley, Chico, Joyce, others.
Well, and yeah, and it was kind of the signal, where is business now in this, where is business going to go?
Yeah, I think after some of the groups or some of the folks were able to either meet with and have those conversations with Lightfoot and kind of see, okay, she's safe, or, you know, to Brian's point, someone we can work with, you saw that spigot kind of start to open a little bit more.
So if I'm Tony Preckwinkle, why wouldn't I be making that an issue if I'm trying to, in a battle of, quote, progressive candidates? I mean, sure, she's done the, Lori Lightfoot's a corporate attorney, but I don't think that translates as...
Because that was the argument she was making all along. I feel it just, it wasn't effective, and maybe the message and the messenger wasn't a trusted source.
Look, I think that the one thing that we're missing of all endorsements that were out there was actually when you had Reverend Jackson, when you had Sharpton get both Preckwinkle and Lightfoot together to have a meeting on the day after the election, which is supposed to take place at an agreed to location on Wednesday.
They both signed
an agreement to say that they're going to come together and work together. That to me is a significant thing if it goes beyond the symbolism.
Totally. I mean, to do that, to agree to that 4 or 5 days before the election, we didn't decide on a beer summit at the GOAT until election night.
Alexei Giannoulis U.S. Senate race. That, yes.
I mean, that was a really knockdown, drag out fight. It was that night that I think the candidates, talking with one another, realized, hey, this was really tough, but we should come out together and kind of show that, hey, we can have these types of disagreements, but yet we can unite afterwards and still try to do the right thing and move the state forward.
And, well, and Alexei looked real happy to be there.
I'm sure it was really tough.
Yes.
Well, but getting back to the Lightfoot Prudwinkle Summit that would happen on Wednesday, understand something here. If they come together as a summit and they can actually figure out that they're going to work together, provided that if things go the way some people think it's going to go, with Lightfoot being mayor, Prudwinkle being
county
board president, let's not forget that, right?
The city wins.
Well, there's an undertone within the African-American community and others that are saying, you know, you have an opportunity to have an African-American mayor and county board president.
That's now, historical.
Not only historical, but if they can actually figure out how to collaborate together, they've got something. They really do have something.
We're going to take a quick break and follow up on this. We're speaking with Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors, Eric Elk from Fulcombe, Illinois. This is our pre-runoff election roundtable. You're listening to the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and this is our pre-runoff election roundtable. Speaking with Brian Bernadoni from the Realtors Association and Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. We're talking about the main event, the mayor's race. So we talked about this, you know, Wednesday unity agreement that both candidates have for the day after the election, which I really don't put a lot of stock into other than just show business.
See, I look at it differently.
You're such a cynic.
Rick, I look at it differently. I think it's a great opportunity.
There's an opportunity, but that's if you believe that it really...
I'm a Cub fan. I do believe in things, you know? I mean, you still wear it.
Yes. That's great to be an optimist.
But think about the partnership here. If Lightfoot and Prudwinkle actually found a way to work together, that's a formidable pair.
This is the assumption that Lightfoot were to become.
That would be the assumption, mayor, right?
Okay. But on the other hand, you have Tony Prudwinkle still would be county board president. But I would think if she loses this, as also by virtue of the fact that she chairs the Cook County Democratic Organization, that she would have a vastly weakened position as Cook County Board President, should she lose the mayor's race.
Well, that'll be up to the committeemen. You know, the Democratic committeemen will make a determination if they want to go down that path or not. I haven't heard anything one way or another.
Well, we're not there yet, but I just would think though. I mean, what does that say when if you were to be the Cook County Democratic Chairman and you're running for mayor and you lose? What does that say about the times that we live in?
Well, it's every race. In every race that we've had in the city, I mean, barely had President Prudwinkle submitted her papers, they were already lining up to replace her as Cook County Board President. I mean, there was already jockeying going on across the board. I mean, so this kind of horse race conversation is not verbote, and it definitely would be something that the party would be talking about as well, one way or another. I mean, it would be an unprecedented thing it'd be a historic thing if President Prudwinkle does prevail on Tuesday, that the chairman of the Democratic Party is also the mayor of the city of Chicago, and that I'd have to think back to when that was, and I'd like to think it was Richard J. Daley, but I think Blandick may have been a chairman of the party or something along those lines. But for these horse race conversations, I think are relevant, but everything becomes real on Wednesday morning, you know, where somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose, and there will be repositioning of everything from committee chairs at the Democratic Party to committee chairs at the Chicago City Council, where there is as much jockeying, if not more so, happening.
Well, yeah, and I tend to wonder, you know, with... if a Lori Lightfoot victory, and I should say that Tony Prudwinkle was invited onto the show. I had Lori Lightfoot on last week. Tony Prudwinkle was invited to the show. Her folks said that for scheduling purposes that she couldn't make it. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. But should Lori Lightfoot win, she doesn't really know the council process to a great degree, and you have, you know, whatever may happen in these runoffs.
She's got mayor. She's a senior partner, Mayor Brown. I mean, she's got people who know the history of the city council upwards, downwards, sidewards. She's going to bring in great people who would understand it. Clearly, if President Preckwinkle came in, she would have an encyclopedic knowledge of it right away.
Right.
In fact, it's been striking that in her conversations, and it's very coded, but in her conversations about the city council, aldermanic prerogative, and council chairmanships and stuff, she's been very acquiescent to the city council running as it has, which is a very, you know, very strong message to the council. I'm not going to shake things up too much versus where Lori is going to be.
Well, and even she was attacking Lightfoot for talking to Scott Wagspack about, you know, potential chairmanships. Which,
how do you not have those conversations? Well,
that was kind of one of the things I was curious. That would seem to be a natural kind of, you know, as part of the give and take of the politics.
Absolutely. It has to be. Yeah.
No, each team is measuring drapes. Each team is figuring out carpet.
It's the Sunday before the election,
Each team is trying to figure out what their transition plan looks like now.
All right. Before we wrap up.
Very quickly. Yeah. I know, Eric, for you that could be difficult, but go ahead.
Wow. No, but the thing I want to point out to the listeners is it's not just an election in Chicago this coming Tuesday. You know, we have in all these suburban communities for mayor, for school board, you know, bonding referendums.
Park district.
And you look at the turnout in the consolidated elections, the last one in 2017, it was 17%, which is dismal. So, you know, hopefully people turn out, you know, what's happening.
So give a darn. Show up and vote.
In your local community, it matters.
And people scream about their property taxes, and they always point to, you know, if you're a suburban resident, they'll scream at Cook County, and then they'll ignore their school board race or park district or library races, which are taxing you exponentially higher than anything the county's done to you.
All right. On that note, okay.
Wait, we didn't even talk about Svengoolie.
Yeah. See. Oh, ding, ding. Okay.
House of Wax.
One word prediction. One quick. Go.
We will have a historic election.
Thank you. First I said female. One name. Come on. No.
Lightfoot sure has the momentum.
But does momentum vote?
We'll find out Tuesday.
Thank you very much. Thank you. On that note. Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors, Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. Thank you so much for joining me on the roundtable.